This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Wednesday to you. And it comes the day as teams got down to the 53-man roster across the NFL. It's always, I don't want to say fun. It's not the right word because you're talking about people that are now going to be looking for their jobs and some of them seeing the end of a dream. But let's just say interesting. Let's just say eye-opening. Sometimes when you get to cut day in the NFL in the summer before the season as to see who is left and who is looking for a new job. The Dallas Cowboys are the team we're going to be focusing on today. We're going to be looking at a team that won 12 games in back-to-back years, and everybody wants everybody gone. Mike McCarthy needs to be fired. Dak Prescott needs to be let go, traded, whatever. We're going to talk about the Cowboys, and I might take a different approach than what seems to be the very easy narrative around Dallas, because I know it's been forever and ever since they won a Super Bowl. But there's a lot of, again, you're talking about one of the more passionate fan bases in all of sports, and I don't know if they're looking at this through the correct lens. We'll talk about that throughout the morning as we continue our previews of teams in the NFC East, the Philadelphia Eagles, coming up on Thursday, and that will be it. We'll be done, and we'll be waiting 1 week from Thursday for the start of the NFL season. But like I said yesterday, it was cut down day, and everybody was getting their rosters down to the 53-man limit, and it means that every now and then a name will pop up that makes you go, oh, wow, he made the team, or he didn't make the team. And the one team that stood out to me yesterday was the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots cut Bailey Zappe and Malik Cunningham, and right now the only quarterback on their roster is Mac Jones. That's right. Only quarterback is Mac Jones. Now, they're going to rectify this. They're not going to have just Mac Jones, the quarterback, for week one when they take on Philadelphia on September 10th. They'll go and get a veteran. They'll find a journeyman. They'll bring him aboard. They'll make an additional cut. That's the way it'll work. But this is similar to taking out your competition, all right? This is similar to you like a girl. The girl may like another guy, and then you help get that guy a job out of state. That's basically what this is. Bill Belichick went into this training camp not committing to Mac Jones at all. Now, Belichick doesn't do that kind of thing anyway, but when you've had 20 years of Tom Brady and no quarterback controversy, let's be honest, this was really the first time we had, first or second time we really had a quarterback question going into training camp. Remember, the guy that followed the guy in New England was not Mac Jones, it was Cam Newton, right? They had just gotten Cam Newton. But then there was Mac Jones. He was the first-round draft pick. He was the starter. They made him the starter. They made him the starter over Brian Hoyer, if you remember that decision. But then Bailey Zappe played four games last season, and they won two. And he threw for over 70% of his passes, completions. And there was a conversation about, well, is Bailey Zappe going to battle Mac Jones in training camp? Well, in the end, when training camp was all said and done, Zappe didn't have a very good training camp. But released? That's a surprise. It's one thing to say, look, in the end, Mac Jones won the starting job if there ever even was a battle in Bill Belichick's mind. Because Zappe, again, he did not play particularly well this preseason. And it was enough to say, hey, look, guys, there is some separation. You may not think there's separation. But basically, Bill Belichick did was make Mac Jones very, very comfortable in the quarterback room. There's no guy around his age battling with him for the job. Malik Cunningham on an electrifying first preseason game where he ran in for a touchdown against third-string defense. He's gone too. So what will the Patriots do? Well, the Patriots will go get a veteran that will be the older, wiser, no threat here quarterback. And Mac Jones can now live a comfortable existence within the quarterback room, knowing no one's around to take his job on a random Tuesday after coming off a loss to the Dolphins. That's what the Patriots did. And it really is surprising. I think Bailey Zappe gets gobbled up. I think there will be some team out there that would like to sort of resurrect this kid from Western Kentucky, because he was pretty good last year. Again, there were people who bought Bailey Zappi jerseys. He was playing that well.
Coined
in
the term,
four games.
Coined the term Zappi Hour.
Zappi Hour. That was the big move yesterday. There were a couple yesterday as well. You know, like there was a couple of guys that kind of got released. One was the good story of yesterday was DeMar Hamlin made the 53-man roster. Now, for those of you who thought it was a sure thing, no, it was not a sure thing that DeMar Hamlin was going to make the roster. This is a tough business. He is a feel-good story. But the Buffalo Bills, that's one of the reasons 53 men on a football team is very, 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 it's kind of like the right number. Because it doesn't allow you to have feel-good stories on the roster, but it means when you make the roster, you deserve to make the roster. There's nobody going, oh, this is a great story. Like, he got to keep his nephew on the team. No, you don't. You don't get to keep your nephew on the team. This isn't college football where the roster's got 100 kids. No, this is 53, and you better be the best 53. So like I was saying, you know, I said before, when you make it, you've really made it. There's no, let's just keep him around because everyone in America is rooting for the kid. You either have value or you don't. And so this actually is better because it proves that DeMar Hamlin has really come back from the cardiac arrest back in early January. He has made this football team. And it was not a foregone conclusion. If you watched Bills coverage or followed Bills coverage, look, he's going to be second on the depth chart. And he was battling some pretty good guys. But by all accounts, throughout training camp, he has done remarkable. He has played well in games. He's played well in camp. And DeMar Hamlin is going to be remaining a Buffalo Bill. There was a trade, yeah, a couple of trades going around, a couple of players. But one I thought was kind of interesting was Will Lutz was traded from New Orleans to Denver. Lutz had some injuries, but he's worked with Sean Payton before. He spent like 7 years with the New Orleans Saints. So Denver is getting a new kicker. They cut Brandon McManus, a longtime kicker, back in May, and we're kind of trying out some people. That's a tough position. That's, again, being a kicker in the NFL is a very tough position because it's one of the only jobs where you better be successful all the time or somebody will just take your job the next day. You know, there's not like, let's work through it. You know, we've invested a lot of time and money with you. We gave up a draft pick for you, or we picked you in the first round. Like, you might do that with quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, you're young and they struggle. You go, well, look, let's give this a real full evaluation before we make a rash decision. Kickers are like, you missed your last three? Yeah, when you come in Monday, if you wouldn't mind dropping off your uniform and your playbook, we really appreciate it. Whatever playbook you get as a kicker. But that's how quick you can go. The Tennessee Titans have used 13 kickers since 2019.
Oof.
13. That to me is absolutely nuts.
So do they currently have their 13th kicker? Because, I mean, is that the lucky number?
They got Nick Folk. They got Nick Folk from the Patriots.
Heard of him?
Yeah, they traded a 7th-round pick in 25 to get Nick Folk. Titans, this stat popped out to me going through all this analysis. They made an NFL worst 74 field goals since 2019. They miss field goals constantly.
Oof.
Everybody comes to Tennessee and misses field goals. Nick Folk is trying to kind of revitalize his career, too. He's going to be 39 years old.
Yeah, so, you know what? But kickers can remain in the game for a while.
They can remain in the game a while.
You know,
as long as you can blast it.
Yeah, as long as you still got a leg.
That's right, as long as you still got a leg.
Especially if you're a field goal kicker. I mean, a lot of teams now will carry a field goal kicker and a kickoff, guy who does kickoffs. And, you know, maybe if you have a Nick Folk, maybe he's like, well, you're just gonna do the field goals. This guy's going to do the kickoffs. That way you don't get killed out there.
Exactly. One other note from yesterday, Jonathan Taylor didn't get traded. Surprise!
What?
I think everyone saw that one coming.
I thought that was a foregone conclusion,
yeah.
Tony.
It really interesting, too, because he's on the pup list. So because he's on that list, he has to miss the first four games of the season. I swear, we talked about this last week. I forget the young lady that was on from Indianapolis, from Wish TV. Her and I came to the agreement, which a lot of people did, but we agreed. Indianapolis had no intention of trading him, right? They knew that. Go ahead, find a trade partner. Go ahead. Come back to us when you got a really good deal. Wink, wink. And they knew he wasn't going to get anybody. No one's going to offer them the first round pick. The Dolphins were a little interested. I heard the Cowboys were a little interested, but in the end, nothing. And now Taylor's going to miss the first four games of the season, and he's going to figure out what he's going to do. They can franchise tag him next year, and they can franchise tag him the year after that. It's unlikely they'll do the double franchise tag, but they will very likely franchise tag him next year, because why not? You can get running backs cheap on the franchise tag, relatively inexpensive. No need to sign them to a big contract. So that was the bit of news yesterday. But
I was disappointed, though, but it's not surprising because he'll probably get picked up somewhere else. But the Broncos cut Kendall Hinton.
Yeah, they cut Kendall Hinton. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Forgot that one.
They're star quarterback.
The guy that took one for the team. I mean, you want to talk about taking one for the team. We talked about him when he played in that one game during the 2020 season, where a bunch of quarterbacks were all messing around with COVID and the whole quarterback room got shut down. They begged the NFL to move their game. They were playing the Saints, I think.
What?
I think they were playing the Saints.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we're not, no. And then they went and found Kendall Hinton, who played quarterback in college for like 2 seconds.
And so, I mean, Sean Payton was coach of the Saints then, right?
Yeah.
Didn't have a soft spot for Kendall Hinton.
I guess he wasn't impressed.
What do they call that guy when they, you know, they keep a member of Congress separate from the State of the Union?
Oh, yeah. Designated.
Designated survivor.
Survivor, yeah.
That was Kendall Hinton.
That's right. That's right. He was. And as was pointed out, he didn't even get the start.
He didn't get the start.
Because they gave it to a running back.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. All right, so we're going to do the Dallas Cowboys today. And there are a few teams I kind of look forward to doing, and Dallas is one of them, because they're just really interesting. They're really interesting.
They always stay relevant.
Yeah, they're very extreme, right? So, again, this is a team that... Last year, let's just give you the pluses. Last year, they won 12 games. That's a lot of wins. Even in a 17-game schedule, it's a lot of wins. They won a playoff game on the road, albeit against a Buccaneers team that stunk. But nevertheless, it was still Tom Brady. It was still the Buccaneers. And they went in and they won that playoff game. They went in a divisional round matchup on the road against San Francisco and barely lost. And yet... Dallas's fan base goes nuts. They go nuts. Mike McCarthy needs to be fired. Dak Prescott needs to be pushed aside for somebody else. And there's like a panic. If there's a panic that everything that they've tried for 25 years hasn't worked, that they have not been to the Super Bowl since they beat Pittsburgh in Super Bowl 30 in Arizona. That was in January of 1996. That's how long ago it was. Right? We're going into Super Bowl 58. So it's been a while. But there is a sense of panic. Now, where does that come from? Why can't every year you just kind of roll and see what happens? And because they're the Cowboys. No, they're not the Cincinnati Bengals. A team that hadn't won a playoff game since 1991 until Joe Burrow and the Bengals beat the Raiders a couple years ago. No, they're not the Detroit Lions, who have never even been to a Super Bowl. They're the Dallas Cowboys. They have the largest fan base in America. They have a team that is built on this excellence. They've been good since the Super Bowl era. That's how they have been a team that doesn't be crap for a long time. They always try to, their expectation is we're going to be good because we're the Dallas Cowboys. We don't swim in mediocrity, even though they sometimes have swam in mediocrity for years. But there's a belief within the fan base that everything except a Super Bowl is unacceptable because the team has a bunch of them. And not every fan base can say that. And that's a true statement. Some fan bases will be lucky to see one Super Bowl appearance in their lifetime. Cowboy fans are expected to see Super Bowl championships, multiple ones, if they live a good long life. And when they had their run in the 90s, they thought that the train would never end. Oh, we'll dip here and there, but we'll always come back, and they have yet to come back. They haven't played in an NFC title game since that time they won to go to Super Bowl 30. So it's a very interesting situation. And here's the thing. A lot of guys in my position hosting shows or even people who write, whatever, it's an easy narrative to state. Dallas just doesn't win. Dallas is terrible, right? But they're not terrible. If you pull yourself away from the hysteria of the Cowboy fan nearest to you, and by the way, no matter where you live in America, that is probably a stone's throw away. Somewhere in your neighborhood, there's a Cowboys fan, right? You pull away from their hysteria for a second, you're talking about back-to-back 12-win seasons, back-to-back losses in the playoffs to San Francisco with a phenomenal defense, a player in Micah Parsons that could win Defensive Player of the Year this year. They have built a strong offensive line that has kind of gone up and down with players coming and going, but their biggest issue is at quarterback. Now, here's the thing with Dak Prescott. If you have a friend, let's say you have a friend and she's dating a guy, and you know that the guy is not all on the up and up, right? Second time, by the way, I've used a dating analogy, and we're only in segment two this morning. Let's say she's dating a guy, and you and your buddies go, see who Samantha's dating? Yeah, he doesn't seem to be a good dude, right? And you are noticing things about this individual that you don't like, way he talks to her, whatever. But she keeps reminding you over and over again that he's really a good person. Or like that person that just does dumb things over and over again, but yet somebody else goes, no, 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 they're really smart. If you have to remind somebody over and over again about an attribute, they likely don't have that. And that's the situation with Dak Prescott. Over and over again, you hear about how Dak Prescott is actually a good quarterback. Oh, no, he leads the league in interceptions, but he's actually a good quarterback. If the media that does that keeps doing that, it doesn't change the fact that when you watch him, you don't see a good quarterback. You see an effective quarterback, capable of winning games, etc. But you also see a guy that throws a lot of interceptions. He led the league in interceptions. And it's one of those sort of complex relationships because you can sense that maybe the missing piece to whatever Dallas is creating, right? They've got a winning head coach, right? This is a guy that has a very high win percentage. And I know a lot of it was in Green Bay when he had Aaron Rodgers, and I kind of get that. But again, this is a team that's won back-to-back 12 games. When you win back-to-back 12 games, you're a Super Bowl contender. I don't care who you are. You win 12 games in this league, you're in the running to win the Super Bowl. I don't care who's in your conference. I don't care who's in the NFL, also in the playoffs. You are in the running. You are in the conversation. As much as most people don't trust you, don't believe in you, you win 12 games, you're in the conversation. Dallas in back-to-back years has been in the conversation. But there's something about their quarterback that just doesn't sit well with people. And a lot of it is some of the bad decisions that he makes when he throws the ball. No wonder Mike McCarthy said at the beginning of the season when Kellen Moore went off to be the offensive coordinator with Chargers when they parted ways with him, that he said he's calling plays, and here's why. He wants to run the football. He doesn't want to throw the football. Well, why doesn't he want to throw the football? Well, his explanation is simple. I want to rest my defense. I want to control the clock. That's how I want to play. I don't want to have the number one scoring offense. He said this. I don't want to have the number one scoring offense in the NFL. Why not? Because his philosophy is, no, we're going to run the ball. My defense is spectacular. The more rest I give them, the more opportunities I give them to take a breath, the better we're going to be. And so, yeah, we might win games 21-18, but it's the 18 on that side that I'm really excited about. And my offense, the way I'm going to call plays, is going to make sure we score more than the other guy, even if that number isn't a 3 or a 4 in front of it. That's the way the Cowboys want to play this year. But it also does the second part. Because if you throw all the time with this quarterback, what's he likely going to do? Continue to lead the league in interceptions. So McCarthy's got such a really good approach because, one, it is the way he wants to play. And, two, it eliminates the one thing that may have been preventing Dallas from taking that next step. He threw two picks against San Francisco in that playoff game. And that was a tight game. That was not a runaway for the 49ers. He doesn't throw those picks. Dallas might have advanced to the NFC title game against a division rival. And you know how that can go. So are they close to a Super Bowl? Well, in this NFC, sure. If indeed you don't put this quarterback in a position where he's just going to make decisions that cost him a chance to throw yet another pick. So it's a really interesting team. It's a sky is falling organization.
Is it a make or break year for Dak?
That's a great question. It's a great question because, look, there's been two arguments that I've been reading about and talking about with Trey Lance, right?
Right.
And I've heard I've been reading some Cowboy blogs and whatnot about this, and I've more or less dove into the Trey Lance thing as more of a Trey Lance situation than rather a Dallas situation. But you kind of can't help but see commentary on both sides, and that is this team is too loaded. CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons on defense, Trayvon Diggs on defense, mm-hmm. Tony Pollard running the football, solid offensive line. This is too strong of a football team to hand it over to an unproven QB just because you want to turn it over to somebody else. That makes sense to me. But it doesn't mean that Dak Prescott is secure just because they're not going to give the keys to a Ferrari to a kid who just got his driver's license. I mean, Trey Lance has shown the NFL zero.
Right.
Zero. Which means he could show you everything or he could show you zero. And so it's not a proven commodity.
And with Dak Prescott, he's shown you maybe 50%.
Yeah, that's right.
Because there are times he's brilliant and there are times that he's just god-awful.
It is a fan base that is exhausted with all of this and desperate for another title. Because the legacy of their position in the NFL is dependent on them winning one soon. We'll talk about that coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. I'll also get into some baseball because it was almost history made last night.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We continue along with Wake Up Call. So we were talking about the Dallas Cowboys. All right, so I made this point at the end of that last segment, which I want to kind of reemphasize again. So the Cowboy fans are crazy. They don't fire Mike McCarthy. They're going nuts on Dak. There's a lot of the sky is falling when the reality of it is this is a very good football team. This is a Super Bowl contending team, just based on the last two seasons of winning 12 games. You may not like their chances. That's a whole different argument. Right, if you put them up, you stack them up against like the Chiefs or the Bengals as actually winning the Super Bowl, you might put them in fourth or fifth under the list of all of the teams in the playoffs. You might put them second or third in their own conference. That's a different argument. What I'm saying is, you win 12 games, you have a chance to win the Super Bowl. Right? You're a Super Bowl contending team. The Cowboy fans don't see it that way, but my point that I made at the end of the last segment was there is a panic. Because Dallas is one of those franchises in the NFL that has had long-time presence in the Super Bowl era, right? I mean, they were in Super Bowl V. They lost to Baltimore, came right back and won Super Bowl VI, right? They were won Super Bowl XII. They lost to the Steelers twice. They won 3 of 4 years, and if you want to go to Super Bowl 27, 28, and 30. Right. So Dallas is one of those franchises that has been around and has had a presence since the Super Bowl era began. You know, they played in the Ice Bowl, for crying out loud. But then when you go this long, right, 95 season all the way until, well, right now, to be determined, you start to lose your presence while others start to step up. I mean, think of since Super Bowl 30, what have we seen? We've seen Denver win three championships. I'm not even going to get to the Patriots. Forget the Patriots for right now. We've saw the Denver Broncos win three Super Bowls, right? We've seen the Pittsburgh Steelers win Super Bowls. Again, we've seen the Patriots win Super Bowls. We've seen the Kansas City Chiefs build a dynasty. That was another team. They played in the first Super Bowl. Dallas fans are feeling like as if the history of the sport right now, there's a period of time where they're not relevant. They didn't win the Ice Bowl, but you certainly know that they were there, right? They may have lost to Joe Montana and Dwight Clark, but they were there. Their story includes some of the most memorable moments in NFL history. And in the last 25 years plus, they've been relatively ignored. They have not had a presence in the big moments of the NFL playoffs. Some years, they haven't been to the playoffs at all. And other times, they're so quick you forgot they were even in it. Oh, you might remember Tony Romo botching a field goal attempt in Seattle or an extra point attempt in Seattle. You might remember Dez catch, no catch, right? Like, you might remember those things. But when it comes time for Super Bowl moments, championship game moments, they're not in it. That's why the fan base gets a little panicky. That's why it's a little different in other markets. And this is not to poke fun at other markets. But the reality of it is that you may feel a sense of change needs to come if you're a Cleveland Browns fan, for example, because since 1999, you've had one playoff win. And you just want more. Lions are exciting this year. They've never been to a Super Bowl, right? Like, you look around the league and you find fan bases that would just be happy to be relevant in the postseason. Dallas is trying to, the fan base is trying to remain relevant in the history of the NFL because it's getting close to 30 years that they've done nothing. That's remarkable. Remarkable. For an owner that loves this team so much, he'll do whatever he has to do to get them a championship. Everything has not worked since that Super Bowl in which they beat the Steelers. And if the Steelers had just had a steady of Bam Morris instead of letting Neil O'Donnell throw the stupid football to receivers that weren't there, they might have actually won that game. Nevertheless, it's a separate thing. That's the level of urgency that the Cowboys have. My brother's a Cowboys fan, been a Cowboys fan since the 70s. He's like that. Where I point out some really good things, and he's like, I don't care. Like, this team has to go to a Super Bowl. And I'm like, wow, you got a lot to build on. Build on? What are you talking about build on? We're the Cowboys. What are you doing here? Like, that's his mentality. Right or wrong, that's his mentality. Steeler fans have it too, right? Steeler fans are proud that I was looking at a chart, and it showed every single year, so they had all 32 teams, and it showed the year in which they had a top five pick in the draft. So it's the last time that the team had picked in the top 10 in the draft. Every team except two has a two in front of it. Every team except the Steelers and New England. Every team has had that moment which they've had a top 10 pick in the draft. The Steelers' last top 10 pick in the draft was Terry Bradshaw.
Wow.
1970. That's incredible, right? That's incredible.
They got to be the farthest because the Patriots had a top 10 pick, what, in the late 90s?
Yeah, in late 90s.
Drew Bledsoe.
I think they had another one.
Right after that?
A couple years after that, yeah. But that's incredible that every team has had a moment where they've either traded up for it, doesn't tell you how they got it or why they got it. Could have been a decent team that just said, you know what, we can get in the top 10, let's make a move. Or they were terrible and had a top 10 pick. Roethlisberger, by the way, was picked 11th, so in case you were wondering where Roethlisberger was picked. But it goes to show you that, for example, the Steelers have the same kind of mentality, right? There is we're never terrible, we're good, but look at, you know, their last Super Bowl appearance was not that long ago, but it's still about over a decade. Super Bowl 45. But this must be killing. Like, there are kids who are growing up, who are going into their 30s. That have never been they've never experienced a Cowboy victory in the Super Bowl. Too young for Super Bowl 30. They might have been two, right? They have no recollection of Larry Brown Super Bowl MVP, right? And they've never seen this team. Find a period of time in the Super Bowl era where the Cowboys weren't at least in the game, right? It's insane. But yeah, that's how they are going.
80s?
Yeah, let's see.
They were really in it in the 80s.
No, they weren't in the 80s, but they played in the championship game for the catch. They were I'm trying to think of it was a couple of others.
It was 81.
In which they had a good run. 81 they lost to the Rams.
That was the catch.
That was the catch in 81. They lost to the Rams. When did the Rams go? Super Bowl 14. So they lost to them.
In the 70s, right?
Yeah, that was 80. Still. 79, 80.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, but you're right. Yeah. Up until from that point, all because you they had to have those really terrible years where they were like 1-15 and then they got better. Yeah.
But then they had the 90s and they were, you know, the star once again. Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, we tend to look at it like in other sports too, compared to other sports. But football is unique.
Yeah,
you know, and the Cowboys are a unique team. And the fact, I mean, they're kind of like, I guess, like kind of like the Yankees.
Well, it's you know what it's really like. It's like the Celtics. Celtic fans grew up, and the big braggadocious thing that they would have was we don't put up Eastern Conference championship banners.
Right,
like, that's not a thing we do. It's either the world championship or nothing. And there's a whole bunch of those. And so it wasn't like, oh, we're going to celebrate winning the Atlantic Division.
Ooh.
Like, they're not doing that. And it's the same kind of mindset, right? It's the same kind of mindset. You embed it into the fan base, and that's where they get very panicky, and they get because they haven't been primed like other fan bases. Like, when you have other fan bases, they're like, man, I'd be just thankful. I just want to die in peace. I just want to see my team go to one Super Bowl. You know, I just want to go. The Cowboy fans are like, if they're not going to be relevant, how, you know, what are we going to talk about for the next 30 years of not being around? So, but yeah, so yesterday, cut down day. We'll get to baseball in a minute, but we did want to mention so long, Josh Peterson, Doug Peterson's son, tight end, he played at the Louisiana Monroe. And he was also on an XFL team or USFL team.
One of those.
I don't remember.
I think it was with Houston.
I think it was Houston. Okay.
Houston Gamblers or whatever.
He tried to make the Jacksonville Jaguars, where his dad is the head coach. But there's no nepotism here.
No.
Yesterday, he was one of the Jaguars releases on cutdown day.
Don't tell mom.
Did not make the team. Yeah, don't tell mom.
Don't tell mom.
I fought for you, son. I really did. I just was overruled by everybody within the organization. Oh. All right. Near history last night. How heartbreaking was it for the one San Francisco Giants pitcher? We'll get to that story next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Don't forget, you can hit us up there on the show this morning. Dallas Cowboys is our preview. We all have the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two. Do we feel bad for Alex Cobb? Almost threw a no-hitter last night. One out away in San Francisco up against the Cincinnati Reds. He threw a lot of pitches last night, but nevertheless, got the complete game victory when it was all said and done, 6-1. Spencer Steer hitting a double with two outs in the ninth inning. He had 131 pitches, most of his career. So he got left out there by Gabe Kapler, who said, go out there and do it, my man.
I didn't understand your question. What was your question again?
Do we feel sorry for Alex Cobb?
Do you feel sorry for Alex Cobb?
I kind of don't.
I'm a Dodgers fan. Do you think I feel sorry for Alex Cobb?
You don't feel sorry for Alex Cobb. I kind of don't. Like, I kind of like, wow, that stinks. Yeah. Too bad. Womp, 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 womp.
No, you know who I felt bad
throw
for?
Throw a better pitch.
You know, the last person I felt bad for, well, there's two people I felt bad for. Obviously, one is Armando Galarraga, because, you know, that was a perfect game. That was stolen from him. But the last person I felt bad for was Dave Steeb. Or Stibe. Or
Dave Steeb.
Remember Dave Steeb?
Yes, of course I do.
Because he had back-to-back games where he needed one out, I think, for
That's
a perfect
horrifying.
Game.
Horrifying. To have it once is terrible. That back-to-back.
It was back-to-back. I can't remember if it was a no-hitter or a perfect game or something like that. But back-to-back games. So him, on that second one, I felt bad for.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, it's not in your cards, man. It's never going to happen. Just give up now.
Chris Heston pitched the last no-hitter for the Giants, and I don't even know who he is, so it wasn't like he was going to go down in the history books as something amazing. Look, no-hitters, there's so many people who have pitched no-hitters. It's you might have forgotten
it. It's old hat. I mean, who pitched the last no-hitter? Yeah. Do you remember? It happened this year.
Just recently, right? This happened the other day, not that long ago.
Yeah.
Oh, who was it?
Don't remember. That's how quickly it is.
I really don't. I don't remember.
But we say, you know, who pitched the last perfect game?
Yeah. That was Domingo Germán.
Exactly.
That's
the big difference right there, right?
That is the big difference. Exactly.
Like a perfect game, we have no hitter. I mean, I think, wasn't it a prominent pitcher too?
I think it was. Listen, my brain is like fried up. I can't remember no hitters. Ho-hum. The only reason I might remember Alex Cobb is because it's easy to say. it seems like an easy pitcher to remember.
Oh, it was Michael Lorenzen.
Oh, yeah, Michael Lorenzen of the Phillies. That's right. His big story was he got traded to the Phillies and he gave them a no-hitter.
I knew there was
in his second outing with them.
there was something to it, right?
Yeah, there was a little fun story with that. Yeah, it came in from the Tigers.
Could remember.
Exactly.
For that was Framber
Sorry,
Valdez.
Michael Lorenzen. Yeah, sorry about that. Didn't mean, yeah, because now they're like, there's combined no-hitters.
Yeah,
like,
there was one this year.
Exactly. But, listen, here's my, this is why I'm glad I wouldn't be in Alex Cobb's situation, even though it'd be kind of fun. Because Alex Cobb's pitching to Spencer Steer, right? He needs one out. He throws the ball, Steer swings and hits it. Now, if you're a pitcher, you're kind of trained to know just in that split second how good that hit is, right? You've been in the business a long time. So you kind of know when something's got a little bit of juice, got a little bit of pop. You know the trajectory, like, oh, no, I don't even want to turn around. But you're kind of hoping maybe somebody makes a play, right? So he's one out away from a no-hitter, one out away from a no-hitter. He throws a pitch, smack. Ball's heading out to right field. He turns around and he sees it go over the head of his outfielder. I would throw a temper tantrum worthy of a grade school kid not getting a toy at Walmart or Target with my parents. I would have screamed, thrown my glove, maybe thrown my hat, sat on the mound with my hands crossed, like, I'm not pitching anymore. I would have been devastated. Are you kidding me? Like, how often am I going to pitch a no-hitter? Like, how often are the baseball gods going to smile on me and give me a no-hitter? And all I needed was one stupid out, and I threw one pitch that Spencer Steer tags for a double. I'd be devastated. He just goes, all right, well. He keeps his composure.
Yep.
He knows the camera's probably on him, right? Because that's what they are. I wouldn't have cared. I would have thrown a fit. The announcers would have been like, and now Tony's acting like a child out there. Look at this. Manager's coming to get him. He's taking off his shirt, throwing it to the ground. He's kicking dirt. He's going to make a mess of that mound. Look, they have to drag him out on the field to get a player to come in, a pitcher to come in. Oh, there goes the glove. There goes the hat. Like, I would have just lost it. I'd be pointing to the heavens, screaming, what have I done to deserve this?
Maybe gone out to right field, start tearing down the wall.
Right, exactly.
Just because?
I would have gone to my right fielder. You couldn't jump to make that play? You couldn't jump 8 feet in the air to catch that ball? Of all the things I do for you. I do everything for you.
It's on you, man.
I help you out with luggage. I give you money when you're on the road when you're broke. I lie to your wife about what I've done everything. You couldn't jump 8 feet to catch the ball? That would have been me. Alex Cobb is a better person than me. He just calmly took it and went, all right, you know what I got to do to get out of this game with a moment like this? I got to strike out Ellie De La Cruz.
Yep.
And he did.
Yeah.
He threw a beautiful inside pitch that caught it right on the inside corner, and Cruz just stood there.
And that I think that'll hurt more, because then if you're Cobb, you're kind of sitting there looking back going, huh, okay, one of the game's most prolific players right now take care of, but that other guy couldn't.
Yeah, Spencer Steer, who I will forget tomorrow, breaks up my historic bid, but I strike out Ellie De La Cruz, one of the brightest stories of the baseball season. That's who I get out? That's who I get out of this game with a complete game win? If Ellie De La Cruz gets a base hit off of you, you go, all right, that happens.
You know,
this guy's amazing.
And then if Ellie De La Cruz goes ahead and steals like seven bases in a
row,
that's
right, yeah.
On the same at bat, it happens.
I got to be honest with you. You know how badly I would have been sweating if Ellie De La Cruz was my final out, if I needed to get him out?
Oh, yeah, that's pressure.
And he hit a ground ball to short? They still might rule it a hit.
Yeah, he would have been safe.
Right?
He'd have been safe with time to spare.
I would have been like, throw it! Throw it!
I think if he had hit it back to the pitcher a second, Ellie De La Cruz would have been safe.
Oh, I would have thrown it over the first baseman's head. If I was Alex Cobb and Ellie De La Cruz hit it to me and I was my final out for a no-hitter, I would have thrown it over the first baseman's head. It would have been an error on my part, so the no-hitter would still be intact.
That's right.
But I'd still throw it over his head.
Here's a souvenir for you, kid.
Yeah, there you go. No, I kind of... You know what? That actually happened. I'm going in the books. The late Don Baylor was playing first base for the Red Sox in 1986 when Roger Clemens was on the mound against Seattle and was heading towards 20 strikeouts. Don Baylor didn't know, you know, that Roger would get the record, but he knew, like, he was striking out a lot of guys and was heading towards the 20 strikeout mark. And there was a pop-up down the foul line, down first base, and Baylor dropped it. I mean, dropped it. Like, if I was playing first base.
Or did he just not even bother catching it?
Just went, uh-oh, whoops. I guess you get another shot, Roger. Yeah. And everyone still goes, Don Baylor, man, what a teammate. What a teammate. He knew the situation completely. It was like, what? You know what, Roger? There you go. Get another one. Yeah, smart man. So, yeah, no, oh, goodness gracious. So the moral of the story is I don't feel bad for Alex Cobb. Sorry about that. I should, but I don't. Still would have been kind of cool. I have this feeling like I'm going to bed and I'm waking up to West Coast no-hitters or near no-hitters. I feel like that's been happening a lot over the past couple of years. Now, a lot of it is you and I used to go to bed early because when we did Super Mornings on this network, we were pretty much going to bed with every no-hitter.
Exactly, yeah. Every game was a no-hitter. What are you talking about?
We'd wake up and go, there's another no-hitter in baseball.
Oh,
happened in
God.
Philadelphia.
I can't believe he lost a no-hitter in third inning.
But, yeah, no, that was pretty cool. By the way, there's a three-way tie now for the West, AL West.
Yeah.
Texas, Houston, and Seattle are all tied
Angels,
for first place.
The Angels aren't involved?
Yeah, the Angels aren't involved.
Shocking.
The Angels are not involved. In fact, they are fire-sailing just about everybody they tried to acquire in making their big run.
I mean, everyone.
Yeah, literally.
Just waving them. Not even trying to get anything back for them. Just like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, Lucas Giolotta, not going to work here anymore.
Yep, Hunter Renfro.
Hunter Renfro, all of them. Bye-bye.
It's gone.
See you later.
I am surprised that the front office didn't go, hey, do you think we could get anyone?
Yeah, especially Lucas Giolito. Giolito's a good pitcher.
Yeah.
I can't believe they just went, nah, go, see ya, bye.
Hunter Renfro has some name to him.
You know what, you think a lot of this is, well, you know what, if we keep him, they're going to cost money, and we want all the money in the world to go to Shohei Ohtani.
Is this a move? Maybe it's
anybody
a move.
Anybody that's going to cost us anything more than what we've got in the budget, We're going to go to Shohei and go, we got rid of all these guys to sign you. And we'll see this winter.